Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. It's a beautiful day, and I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, good to see you again. Yeah. Welcome back. Yay. We were unsupervised last week.
Yeah. And on the political left, Shireen Gurbani.
Hello. Hey, listeners, special shout out to Paul, who's listening along.
I love it. Hey, I just got back from D.C., you two.
And, condolences.
Yeah. It's a different town right now. Everything was fenced off. They were getting ready for a big fight.
I was surprised you didn't stay out and go see the fight.
I was there solo, not with workmates, not with family. And I did get on the city bike and ride around a little bit.
Yeah.
I do that from time to time.
Was it an e-bike or
I did a real one. Real pedal bike this time. But I was surprised how different the city feels just because they're getting ready for the July 4th celebration. There's a lot of things behind fences. You know, obviously, I have the east wing of the White House under construction. And then I mentioned this big fight going on, but it was a little different.
Yeah.
So,
How'd the reflecting pool look?
You know, interesting. That's what my kids asked. It was still all, you know, fenced off.
Yeah.
They're still working on it. It didn't look that different to me.
No, it doesn't look that different.
It didn't look that different to me. So there you have it.
Yeah. I've been working on that for a while.
I have this aversion to constantly talking about the current president. The current president's in the news so much that it makes it difficult. But let's do a little lightning round of some things going on in Washington.
Basketball.
Okay, you want to start there? Let's do it. We'll go to New York City. We'll go to the Knicks game. Our president was booed during the game. This is game three of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden.
First president to go... Attend NBA final.
Okay. Well, and I've not seen any video clips of this. Have you?
Oh, yeah.
How clear was it?
That he's sleeping?
That he was being booed. That he was booed.
Well, both things are happening. Not good.
Well, it is the NBA after all.
Well, these games are hot and they're really fun. And I actually think that the biggest gripe that I have about this is what it did to the local businesses and how it shut down basically Midtown in New York City, and the amount of people who were about to have probably the biggest, most lucrative, the bars in the area, the restaurants in the area. Mm-hmm. There were many street parties that were planned that had to be canceled for security. This is for his ego.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to go.
Shireen, last time you and I were in New York together, we rode in and we embraced and said goodbye right there, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, John, this is an area of New York I'm in, you know, four times a year.
I have never been to New York City.
Okay.
Well, airport, but never left the airport.
It's just Madison Square Garden is kind of like from the outside, kind of a dump. I mean, it's not. You look at it and you're like, wow, that's just sort of an old arena.
That's it, yeah.
But boy, on game nights, is it a happening place. And the last time I was there on a game night, this round of the playoffs, it wasn't the finals, but man, I was on an e-bike.
Yeah.
And I went on one of the city bikes, and I could not find a place to park it at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
But everyone's coming for the game that starts at 7, you know, whatever.
There you go.
Okay, a couple more. Knicks game. How about the Kristen Welker? This is the NBC News Meet the Press. She got this exclusive interview with President Trump. I watched the clips of this.
This was the one that was kind of in a barn with the rain
in
outside.
Wisconsin.
And she's asking questions.
So
and it's one of those horrible moments, both for the interviewer and the interviewee, I think. It's not a good look on either of them, where Trump actually took off his microphone and stormed off complaining about rigged elections.
Yes, complaining about rigged elections.
You see the video of this?
I sure did. And I will say, huge kudos to her, really just calmly asking, what is the evidence of that? It's been litigated hundreds of times at this point. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence for the claims that you are making. What is the evidence for that? And he just looks unhinged.
It gets
honestly
under his skin.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
this
he leans in and he just keeps saying, all you have to do is look. All you have to do is look. I mean, what's happening in California? What's happening in California is they're counting the votes.
Mm-hmm.
Just like here, it takes a little bit of time.
It's interesting to me how this seems, John, to be the issue that you can't violate to be in the Trump circle. In other words, even like Kevin Warsh in his confirmation hearings is being really careful about, you know, was the election rigged? Who won?
Well, and I've learned, you know, recently there's a much broader spectrum of what it means to steal the election. I mean, some will say stealing the election is all the negative press that he was getting as he was running and it was stacked against him.
Yeah, some people might say that about Hillary Clinton.
That was stealing the election.
Yeah.
To others where I think Shireen was just basically saying, you know, there's this limited view of what it means to steal the election. And I would say to the California example, it's not stealing the election per se, but the way they count leads to discredit the process because people are wondering what is taking California so long and let's be honest, and we see it in Republican states and we see it in Democrat states, people choose processes that will advantage their group. Doesn't mean they're stealing the election per se, but will advantage their group.
Some might call gerrymandering into the conversation.
Vote by mail or not vote by mail, the ease with which you can register on election day versus not, showing ID, so forth. Processes are chosen to, you know, for various reasons, but it does play into advantage for one side or another.
Shireen.
But to the president's thing, I mean, it's been litigated how many times? And as I've said before, put up or shut up. If you're going to truly claim it was stolen,
prove it.
Yeah. Shireen and John, you also probably saw that the Senate approved the $70 billion of additional ICE and Border Patrol funding. This will continue the immigration crackdown happening in our country.
Yeah, it will. And I just want to be really explicit. When you think about the horrific images that we saw, the lives lost in Minnesota, there have been more. I think now we're up to maybe 40 or more individuals who have died in ICE detention facilities. We're talking about the outbreaks of measles that are happening in these environments. Children are not being fed or kept in humane circumstances. Every single one of our representatives voted to extend basically a blank check.
Yeah, interesting.
That's what they did.
I'll reflect back on my visit this week to D.C., but boy, were there a lot of military everywhere.
Yeah.
The National Guard were there, and then you'd see ICE, then you'd see DEA, and then you'd see military vehicles. It was just sort of, I'm not going to say a police state, but it felt different to me.
Yeah.
Lots of police.
Yeah, lots of police.
D.C.'s not a state.
Would you also agree that they kind of just look like they're meandering, though?
Totally.
I mean, that's what I thought was so upsetting about the whole thing.
It's just a bunch of men walking around with their hands in their pockets.
Yeah, with their hands in their pockets. It's performative.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But
it's your tax dollars.
On ICE, we're still dealing with the broken, dysfunctional Biden immigration policy with the border and stuff like that. And this is one of those things. We agree that what ICE is doing
crosses the line
in many ways. But there are certain acts that they need to do with dangerous immigrants that are improperly here. And so, but that's...
And we actually all agree on that. And I do think, I mean, I know it's your job to sit here and bring up Biden's failed policies, but I do think
but
you actually and I both agree that this has been going on for decades, that we simply do not have...
immigration policy?
Yes, we do not have people who have the courage to address this issue.
Yeah.
Democrats and that means that we have to keep living with this.
Like to campaign on it, but they don't want to
fix it. Do anything.
I think it's so crazy. I would just get elected and go do what's right.
That's why Natalie for governor.
Anyway, okay. Let's keep it.
Natalie
for president.
I'll bring it to Utah. The first rule you're taught in the legislature is 38-15-1.
Yeah, right.
Okay, you can do what you want to if you can get 38 in the House, 15 votes in the Senate, and the governor to agree.
Yeah. Well, we also got Todd Blanche now has been formally nominated as the new attorney general. Of course, wasn't he deputy attorney general to Pam Bondi?
And then he was acting.
Yeah. I don't think this is a surprise at all. I do find him more capable than some of the Trump cabinet. I just find him to be intelligent that, speaks to the law and does an okay job, particularly relatively speaking to some of these cabinet members that just feel like they're, TV hosts.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is he a skilled attorney? And I think you're absolutely right. But, he's also...
Probably a better way of saying it.
He's also, he was Trump's personal attorney.
Definitely
a Trump loyalist.
Yeah. So there's loyalty there. I thought it was interesting that Pam Bondi was pointing that he was the one over the release of the Epstein files.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I think with this, the fact that you just brought this up is really important. This is Trump's personal attorney. And that is also how he seems to function around what the attorney general is supposed to do. That's actually supposed to be our attorney, the people's attorney. That is a total, I think, misconstruing and actually just very much in line for what this administration does.
Interesting.
Well, I think this is one of those key debates, whether it's, the U.S. Attorney General or even State's Attorney General. What is their role? Is it legal advisor to the government or is it some broader top law enforcement officer?
Service to the people.
Elected office.
Nation or state, and how does that work?
Yeah.
It creates inevitable conflicts because you can have a governor's office at the state level with a certain legal point of view and a separately elected attorney general with a different point of view, and they both are heads of state in some sense. Really interesting. Let's do one other one. Did you see that a federal judge ruled against President Trump and his $100,000 annual fee on H-1B visa applications?
Yeah,
Whoa. I didn't even see this go down, but that's a huge fee.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, basically it was, again, the grift. I mean, it just continues. But what I'm glad to see that there do still continue to be judges who are willing to stand up to this administration.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the key things is saying, okay, Congress is the one with the power to tax. So it's unlawful for the president to do this, but Congress can do this if they choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. I'm sorry to be so President Trump focused, but it's this, you know, coming up on June 14th when on the White House South Lawn, and I just saw all the staging for this and whatnot. It's President Trump's 80th birthday, and they're going to have a big UFC fighting event.
Yeah.
This will be one of his, he will love this.
Oh, I think he will love this for
many
reasons.
He will love this, yes, for many reasons. And I heard that they were going to do the weigh-in of these fighters at the
Lincoln Memorial.
Yeah. And I was just sort of like, because what happens then is the Lincoln Memorial gets fenced off, and all these people that plan their trips to be in D.C. and want to go see the script of the second inaugural or something, or they don't get to see it.
They don't get to see it, and it's such a... I just feel like it's making such a mockery of what we should be reflecting on around the 4th of July and around this time in our country.
Yeah. Did you guys see anything else that really caught your attention, at least nationally? Just one last topic. I mean, I can go to Marco Rubio having to testify about Trump sleeping at public events, or we could go, you know, to...
I mean, this is international, but it's still the on-again, off-again, you know, issues in Iran. And the simple fact is Iran wants to stall. I mean,
yeah, they win.
There's really no incentive for them to do a deal. They've been stalling for years, for decades.
Yeah.
You know, we got to deal with the terror that they create, not just in the Middle East, but in other places. But it's one of those things. They don't want to do a deal.
Yeah. And it'd so be nice to be spending less time on professional fights and more time on getting out of wars.
Wouldn't it be good? Yeah.
And I think Trump wants to get out of the war. He wants to bring peace to the Middle East. He wants to put down the risk of nuclear weapons. But he's dealing with somebody who just doesn't want to negotiate that way.
And he's not, I think we can be honest, not as clearly laser focused on this as he should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's take a brief break, and I'll promise our listeners we're not going to talk about President Trump in the second segment. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gourvani and John Dougal. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shereen Gourvani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we've got to talk about the voting rolls.
Yes.
Our lieutenant governor's been
busy again.
Audit them. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Lieutenant Governor Henderson. I keep watching the way she conducts herself, what she does, and she just strikes me as the type of person we're really lucky to have in public service. That's just me.
Yeah.
Shereen, what are you seeing on the voter
rolls? Okay, very much agree. So she really did a comprehensive audit of Utah's voter database and found that 99.72% were verifiable U.S. citizens. They found about 50 folks, 27, that they were unable to verify. I should say that the way the article talks about it in the Salt Lake Tribune is 27 alleged non-citizens. 11 of those were registered in Utah County, which is interesting because that's where we hear a lot of squawking about this issue. Mm-hmm. There were 25 additional probable non-citizens who were registered to vote. Of this entire group, my understanding is only 13 had cast votes, and they think that probable non-citizen category are folks who are DACA. So it can be a little bit, they're technically not citizens. Yeah.
Some people don't quite understand how DACA folks don't know they're not citizens, but when you're brought over as a kid and you're raised, you may not know.
When you say DACA, our listeners will think of Dreamers.
Yeah, Dreamers. Yeah, exactly.
These are folks that were brought over as kids illegally, and then were raised here, and some didn't even know.
Yeah. So the thing that I thought was so important about the article and the interview that she provided around this, first of all, I think it's good for us to do this because, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about this time of declining faith in institutions, and to really have mm-hmm. this like deep voter investigation is important. But one of the things that she's fighting back against this administration on is wanting to take our voter rolls, right? Mm-hmm. And when you had mentioned in the first segment, Natalie, that really this feels like the one place that you cannot cross the president on, the reason is because I think this is forecasting. This president is going to do everything he can mm-hmm. to undermine the midterms that we have coming up mm-hmm. and I think the next election as well. So to be able to do that, he has to drop all of these clues along the way. And what he wants is access to voter rolls across this entire country. Mm-hmm. And she's fighting back. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, look, we did this audit. We have this information. We're being very transparent about it. And the quote from her is, it does beg the question, what is the purpose of the federal government trying to get their hands on all of this private data? And I do think that's important. And I think I'm proud of her for pushing back.
Yeah.
Well, and there's a certain dynamic here. When we're talking about this voter information, there's some stuff that I think is public and can be shared. It could be out there with the public versus other information that, you know, people yeah. find more sensitive, such as their address.
Right.
And there needs to be affiliation. And there needs to be certain, I describe mm-hmm. as transparency and yet a recognition of greater yeah. desire for privacy these days. And that's why I think poll watchers is so critical in the sense that opposing camps can watch the process, can yeah. see the rolls, can express concerns to the election folks when they're, you know, don't see something that's right. When mm-hmm. they're concerned with this person may be getting the wrong ballot or maybe not properly in this district.
It's primary season and I cast my ballot today, dropped it at a box today. But as I was filling it out, my husband was next to me and we're doing these things. You know, you sign your signature and I say, make sure it looks like your driver's license, honey, because yeah. that's what they compare it to. And then this year they had you add the last four digits of your driver's license number. That was new for me in my memory.
I think it's been there.
Has it been there for a
yeah.
little while? Okay.
Well, cool. I think it's optional and you can add, or no, maybe that is, now it's
okay.
required.
Okay, it had to do the four, yeah.
Yeah.
And then of course, what was also optional was
phone number, email.
And email. And I remember
and
as I did it.
For a while.
Yeah, and I thought about it. My husband said, should I put it? And I said, well, put at least your phone number because if there's a problem with your ballot, they'll call you. But what I was interested in is I don't like putting out my email and phone number for political parties to now traffic me.
Yeah.
Meaning with all of their...
Don't worry. I already shared it with them.
but that's when we talk about privacy on the ballots, that's part of what we're talking about, right? Yeah. Is your personal information of your uh-huh. phone number, your...
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I don't mind if people know if I voted or not. I just don't want to know anything else.
I don't want to share it. It's like yeah. when I go in a store. Can yeah. I get your phone number? No.
You two voted yet?
Yes, I voted.
Yeah.
Did you?
I've marked my ballot, but I have not dropped it in yet.
Okay. And did you mail yours back? How did you?
I mailed it. I mean, I did it the day it came.
Okay. Okay.
Enthusiastic.
I put mine in the box.
Yes. And I do have to say, at this point, if you're listening to it, do not mail. You need to drop it in a box or take it in on election day or vote in person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. There's been some other news. I hate to bring up something that seems like old news, but it's still very well playing out. But the Box Elder Data Center, new polling shows 71% of the residents oppose this thing.
Yeah.
This is not, politically, this is going to be very present going all the way through the elections for Congress, for the House and Senate, for county commissioners, for city councils.
Yeah, that's right.
And why is that? I mean, is it just because it's so astronomically big that for a lot of folks, it's like, you know,
yeah,
it sounds scary.
I think people feel violated is the word I'd use. This notion that something this big came out of nowhere, this is at least a perspective, and is anybody listening to me?
Yeah.
I think there's an alienation that they feel.
Right.
Just a gut feel.
And this is one of those things for me. It's like, okay. We claim that we believe in property rights, but then we want to, you know, control how other people use their property.
And I get there's
certain things that we can debate when it comes to water and yeah. air quality and fuel and how we price that and provide that. But when it comes to other situations and you're, you know, somebody's yeah. bought the property and they want to yeah. use it and it's so far away, there's a part of me that's like, what yeah. is the concern with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A violation of, you know, we're going to do this for the lake, but then we're also going to do this, or we're going to clean up our air, but then we're also going to do this.
Yeah.
And I just think there's a lot of conflict.
We live in a warming state and we're going to make it hotter.
Yeah.
We're going to put the lights in.
Bad looks.
I think it's that too. I also think it is really hard for Utahns to swallow the argument that we're hearing honestly, from our governor and many leaders, that we're in a competition with China, and so we have to do this. Mm-hmm. For what? Like, the argument has not been made. It's not been made well to people in any way that they believe that mm-hmm. or understand it.
Okay. And from my perspective, I totally agree with that concern, because too much of what I've seen over the last many years is we push, well, longer than that, but we push and push things off into China, rare earth elements, mm-hmm. other things like that, manufacturing and mm-hmm. so forth, undercutting our manufacturing capabilities in the U.S. and so forth. And when it comes to AI, I view that as one other thing. Are we going to push this off to China? They're going to be, you know, experts at this, and we're going to be also ran, and we're going to be like the Europe of today, you know, when it comes to this kind of technology that they've fallen behind of where they were a few decades ago.
A question that I don't really have an answer to, but have either of you been to China? That's the first question.
No.
Okay. But so I want to share an observation. I remember being in China and waking up in the morning and looking at my hotel room and seeing thousands and thousands of people on bicycles riding to their place of work. And then doing some tours of some of these places of work and seeing these thousands and thousands of people on the manufacturing floor doing what they do. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Just the scale is what I'm trying to get at. Right. And the amount of people, and then the sophistication of their manufacturing. And sometimes it's not even sophistication. It's just raw, you know, critical mass. So interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, either of you see any of these Utah Debate Commission debates?
I did not.
No.
Okay. Well, we won't talk about it then.
Okay.
I only watched, I watched a few of them, but I watched the Carrie Ann Lisenby, Blake Moore debate. What'd
you notice? Debate.
They're both outstanding, honestly. I mean, I'm a big fan of Blake Moore. He does great work, but Carrie Ann Lisenby is very thoughtful. She's articulate, and I felt like she held her own in a really... I was impressed.
So I have to say, I watched just a few minutes of that. And actually, I do believe the exchange was over data centers.
Oh, okay.
And I was surprised at how I thought he seemed ill-prepared. I don't think he seemed as confident as I imagined him to be, given his service.
And he's, you know, he's a very bright, very experienced. He's good.
Yeah.
He's really good. Okay, another one. Let's go to the Salt Lake City Council.
I'm going
to
say CD3, we did not have a primary, so there's no debate.
I gotcha. Yeah. If we go to Salt Lake City Council and this new replacement that they're putting on, Jennifer Napier Pierce, the former editor of the Salt Lake Tribune, former journalist on her own right, doing her own things.
Yeah, but
work for Governor Cox.
Governor Cox.
Work for Governor Cox. Her husband's been on the Utah Supreme Court. Not anymore.
Retired.
They're sort of a power couple. But she's been appointed to the city council. I'm thrilled about this.
Okay.
I think so highly of Jennifer. And I don't know.
Jennifer's a great person.
I didn't know some of the other people that had submitted applications, but this is going to be a good public servant.
I would say yes. And one of the things that I hope for in any public servant is someone who can sort through the noise to get to the facts. Mm-hmm. And I do think she brings that.
Journalists are good at that, by the way. They distill.
Yeah, they really do. And I think that's good. I think that this city council could benefit from better, clearer, and more frequent communication. I hope that's something that she brings mm-hmm. to the role.
She's in communications.
It's in her
so
background.
Maybe, yeah.
This is a place
but
where...
But it's always hard to communicate when you're this collective.
I know.
A council, a board, it's hard.
It's hard.
Versus a singular executive.
Right. And this is my long-term belief that the city should have its own comms department that isn't the council or the mayor, but is the city, like the voice of the city. Mm-hmm. They tried to do it and I don't know. Anyway, point of the story is... I think this is interesting. One of the things that I wonder about is if there's this sense that we'll have a more favorable relationship with the state government if, you know, given her experience there.
Yeah, could be, because she's worked at the state at the highest levels. And
yeah, and I would just say I don't really think that's how this works. But I do think having a deep understanding of how the state government works and having those relationships is always good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you guys see this? Controversy might be too strong, but this issue of this Centerville City Council member, Shaylin Heyman, who's been putting a small pride flag near her nameplate at council meetings. It's her protest against the law that banned rainbow stripe flags.
Yeah. Yeah. And basically what she's saying is, I'm an individual. I am not a government entity. This was a law passed around government entities displaying, so like Salt Lake City. I mean, this was targeted, going right back to what we were just talking about, targeted at Salt Lake City, flying the trans flag and the Pride flag during this month of Pride. Happy Pride, listeners. And I think good for her.
Yeah.
I think a lot of folks are going to question, going, okay, maybe in your private life, you're an individual, but when you're sitting there on the dais as a city council, you are a governmental entity.
Yeah.
Collectively, you are the governmental entity. You are the governing board of that governmental entity.
Yeah. John, what'd you think of our governor? I know we're almost out of time, but instead of doing a, you know, resolution, whatever, on Pride Month, whatever, he did this. What did they call it?
Fidelity.
Fidelity Month.
We are in Fidelity Month.
It surprised me because...
Infidelity? What did you say?
We are currently in Fidelity
Month. I'm sorry.
And it's somebody who just hasn't really thought
through how dumb that is. Gordon Monson opined about this in his column in the Tribune, but I found it a little off-putting just because if you want to do that, don't do this month.
Yeah, feel free to choose any other month.
Can we not have both?
We're having both in the same month. I think there's an importance to fidelity. I think there's an importance to family. I think there's an importance, and it's good for the governor to recognize that.
A lot of gay people live that way, too.
Yeah. Well, never a dull moment, you two, in public policy work. So happy for the conversation. We got a lot of good things planned this summer to share with our listeners. So Shireen Gorbani, John Dougal, Natalie Gochner, thanks, everybody, for listening. Anthony Scoma produces our program. Have a great day, everyone.